So this question of being personal comes up a lot amongst devotees, but his feeling is that it's really a question of, I mean, they are, in reality they are asking, who is going to love me, or is there going to be anyone who is going to be loving me, how I will be loved, and things like that. So it refers to that, in reality, this question of being personal.
Means the living entity by nature is dependent. So that means relationship means for their happiness they're dependent upon others. So if it's spiritual, then you depend completely on Krishna and the devotees there. And while one's here, then one has relationship with the devotees here. But the point of operating these relationships, then that's actually the question. How to operate those relations. Because that works, that one needs that interaction. You know, one needs interaction. But how that interaction works depends upon what is your role. Does that make sense? You know, if it's a parent, you know, the relationship with the child is by taking care of them. You know, or friends, you know, being mutually supportive. You know, or servants serving the master, and master take care of the servant. You know, or a husband taking care of the wife responding to that protection. So, you'll get what you need by doing what you're supposed to do for someone else. Does that make sense? This idea that I will sit here, everything will come to me. How is that going to work? Right? Unless you deal with others, how it's going to be manifest. Because if your point is everyone must come to me, then even if they do come to you, what are you going to do to reciprocate? Right? Why should they keep coming to you? Right? Think about it. What are you doing for them that they should keep coming to you? What makes you so special that the whole universe should just be coming to you? Does that make sense? So the principle is that if you put yourself in that mentality, then you can't figure out why no one's coming to you, right? Because you have your own standard what coming to you means. And even if they do, if you don't respond, why they shall keep coming? Because the principle is you respond with how someone deals with you, like that. Then it will work. Otherwise, if there's no response, how will it function? Is that guess somewhere? So now the science of how that interaction is, then that's a whole nother thing. Does that make sense? Some other question? I mean, you can be on the same point, just taking it further.
So there are factors in us or characteristics in us that impend the possibility of people coming to us because we don't respect them enough or we don't appreciate if they've done something for us. So how can we give up these obstacles in us that obstruct the possibility of others coming to us?
Do you want to have a relationship or do you not? You just sit there and food comes to you, right? It chews itself, it swallows itself. You understand? Name anything in the world that if you want, you don't have to work for it. You want money? You have to work. You have the money. You want to buy something. You have to work at it to go out and buy it. And once you buy something, you have to work at it to maintain it. And you have it, you have to work at it to make it work. Right? You have a blender, but unless you put things in there and plug it in and turn it on, it doesn't work. So everything that you deal with, you have to take the active role. So why in people, which are much more developed and complex than things, is it supposedly going to be the opposite? You have to have a skill to run a machine. You have to have a skill to have a job that makes money. But people think there's no skill in having a relationship, right? Just because you want something, does that mean you have it? And just because you want something, even if you get it, does that mean you know how to use it? You know what I'm saying? You want a fancy computer, but if you don't know how to use a computer, what will you do with it? Just because you want it is enough? So that means you have to work. right? We don't know how to drive. We want a car. We learn to drive. But in relationships, we just expect it'll just happen just because I want. Does that make sense? So Prabhupada says, first deserve, then desire. Does that make sense? Yeah.
So on the same point, taking it a little further, like when devotees ask these questions, it's also in the picture that they are somehow lacking in friends, and they would need friends with the friends with whom they can have deep relationships and deep relationship. And, so devotees need one, two, or three friends, confident friends. And is it can everyone have a friend? So will it develop with Krishna consciousness, or some people will never have friends?
Means the problem with having friends is just knowing what a friend is and how to be one. And that's what I mean, is that the idea is I will do nothing and then everybody else will make it wonderful. I'm sitting in the West. Have a family, have a job, have all the problems that's there in the West. You know, my kids growing up in the modern society, you know, aren't necessarily that devotional, a little wild, a little crazy. You know, my parents divorced, and I'm having trouble in my own family relationships, right? And so then it's just getting too much. It's expensive, it's hard work, there's not much coming back. So I'll move to Mayapur, right? It's a holy dom, everything's wonderful, everything's perfect. So I'll be so happy there. And then when we get to Mayapur, then, you know, other people's kids are bothering my kid. This one's, you know, making politics with that one. And what's going on? I thought it's the holy dom. Everything's supposed to be perfect. I just wanted to come. I wanted to make friends. I wanted everything to work nicely. But no one's cooperating. Translation. I am a social wreck. My family is a social wreck. I moved to Mayapur with the idea that everybody else has to be perfect. I'm living in that perfect environment. Therefore, I will become inspired to also raise my, you know, standards and methods and all that. But it's everybody else's responsibility to do everything perfect for me. Then only can I adjust and change. End translation. Purport. I'm the only one that can be a nonsense in the universe, be self-centered, have all bad qualities because that's the way I am, because of my environment that made me that way, and everybody else has to understand that, adjust all their lives around me, and then I'll be inspired that maybe, you know, I will make an attempt when I feel like it, if I'm not having a bad hair day. Sound familiar? Now, if we were just, let's say, objectively, analyzing this, what might we find wrong with this approach? Oh, and we forgot to say the conclusion was, is then, having seen that everybody is not personal, doesn't cooperate, has all bad qualities, therefore we've decided that, you know, this is, you know, how you say, not the right place, it's, you know, not the real dom, so I pack up and go back wherever I came from. And whose fault is it? Everyone else, of course. It's obvious. You know, what is it? Elementary, my dear Watson. Isn't it? Does that make sense? So, the point is relationship means you have to respond to how you're being dealt with. And if need be, you must be the one taking the step. But if you're taking the step, you can't stop because people don't respond. And if no one else is taking the step, you can't use that as an excuse to not take a step. Does that make sense? The car should start on its own. It doesn't, you push it.
There may come a situation when there is nothing to do further. So even if it doesn't start, even if you push it, it doesn't make sense to...
Maybe you're pushing it in the wrong way. You have to be behind the car and pushing it forward. If you push on any of the other three sides, you might not get a good result. You know, or you stand on the roof and jump up and down, or you know, like that. Or you try a new approach, you use the diagonal. The diagonal. So, therefore, then you'd have to check, is your technique correct? Right? Everybody's dying for relationships, so if you're dealing properly, why wouldn't it work? You know what I'm saying? Everybody at the disco's there to pick somebody up or be picked up, but at the end of the day, how many actually get picked up or pick someone up? So that means they don't know what they're doing. Everybody, that's why they went there. Right? You don't want to be picked up, you don't go to a disco.
So we came here to find our friends, and it looks like as if we had to go home alone.
But going home alone doesn't solve any problem unless you're making a movie. And it only works if you're 8 years old. So. Otherwise, then you're going to have to put in as much work here as you would anywhere else. Yeah. Right? Relationship is relationship. If you're going to cook a sabji at the temple, it's no more or less work than if you're going to cook the same sabji at home. The endeavor is the same.
So he saw the results of some research. Some person did a research on devotees who left the movement, and it was found that the main reason was that these devotees didn't find any deep relationships within the movement, and that's why they left.
But let us say, okay, someone didn't find deep relationships, but you have to know what you're looking for, right? Let us say we take this. You have a man, he wants to get married. And his idea of the relationship is, every time he comes home, he's going to be greeted by an enthusiastic wife who's just going to spend the whole time that he's wants to interact with her, he's serving. And when he doesn't, he'll just be reading his newspaper or working on his computer. And that's the perfect relationship. Sounds good? Yeah? Sounds good. Is it going to work? No. So that means your concept of a relationship is not real, because one is taking it as one-sided. Relationship means interaction. What are you doing? Right? Something happens because something is making it happen. The wife serves the husband. What is the husband doing that inspires the wife to serve him? Right? But his idea, he's basically doing nothing. He's just being served. Where's the relationship? You know what I'm saying? I'll just walk into a store, and all the, you know, salespersons are just going to walk up and hand me stuff and say, here, take this home. I want you to have this. So would that be a realistic concept of shopping? No, you have to pay money. So a relationship means you're doing something, therefore another person is inspired to respond. They're not responding means something's being done wrong. Does that make sense? So those who leave because of that, it may be because of people's bad behavior, but then you'd have to establish two things as undeniable fact. That there's no one somewhere in the movement that doesn't also know how to interact with you. And two, that you actually know how to interact with people. Because good chance that before they joined the movement, they also didn't have any friends. Go ahead, give me a list of all those devotees that left because there was no friends in the movement, that before they joined, they were a popular, everything was happening for them, and all that, and they were not frustrated, nothing with material life and friendships and relationships and marriage and everything. And just due to pure philosophy, they just joined the movement. And then when they joined, they found this whole group of uncultured, uncivilized, unreciprocating impersonalists. They were losers in relationship before. They're losers still. You know what I'm saying? Krishna says in the Gita, what kind of people come to Krishna? Artha, Artarthi, Jnani, and Jigyasu, right? Artha, they're having problems with the world. They're looking for a material solution to the material problems. So they figure by religion, by being good, you're going to therefore get the natural result of good. But if they don't get the good they're looking for, then they go away and look somewhere else, because they're just looking for good. If you understand the ultimate good is Krishna consciousness, then you'll stay. But if the material good doesn't follow the religious practices, then what do you need religion for? It doesn't give me the good I'm looking for. Does that make sense? Artarti, they need facility. So if by taking up the religious process I don't get the facility I'm looking for, why would I stay? If I understand the ultimate facility is being engaged in Krishna consciousness, then I'll stay. You know what I'm saying? In other words, return to the religious principles for artha. The other one's turning to them for kama. Jigyasu is turning for knowledge. They get the knowledge, they may go away. If they understand the ultimate knowledge is Krishna consciousness, they won't. Right? The jigyasu is coming to know God and know one's relationship and develop that relationship. So those are the four categories of people who approach Krishna consciousness. So if they came with a material need and either fulfilling or not fulfilling that material need, they go away, why would God consciousness be the fault? Another angle is that you're in a hospital. Have you ever seen a hospital where you're the only one that's sick in the whole hospital and everybody else is healthy and chirpy and only interested in your welfare alone and nothing else, with one pointed, undivided attention? Right? Or is a hospital full of all kinds of other sick people and there's a few people there trying to make them healthy? So that means when you come to the movement, you're looking for something, but so is everybody else. So just as you expect them to do something for you, they're expecting you to do something for them. Then you have a relationship. But if it's all one-sided, that means you don't know what a relationship is. So if we do that study, who's the study done by? Someone who knows the Vedic conclusions or someone who doesn't?
It was one devotee, but I heard 15 years ago, something like that.
Okay, but then the conclusion was what?
He hasn't heard it.
Because there wasn't one. Because the person making the check probably wouldn't know. It's nice to do that, figure that out, but then what's the solution? Because you have to know what is personal. So as we discussed before, then relationships based on duty. So have you heard those who are professing the more personal development within the society, professing the understanding of individual duties? And all you hear is, we should be nice, we should care, we should be concerned. But how do you care? How do you be concerned? There's a science, right? You have a friend, you know, two boys. You're concerned. You come up, whack them on the back. Say, hey, don't worry, right? You have a one-year-old baby. It's crying. You're concerned. You whack it on the back. You say, hey, don't worry. You know what I'm saying? So it's very nice to say all these things. Be nice, be kind, be good. But what's the science of being nice, being kind, and being good? That they don't know. Otherwise, they would be professing the use of, you know, Daivavarna Ashram. They would be professing, you know, the third verse of the Shikshastakam. They would be professing Vaishnava etiquette according to tradition. But generally, they will be opposed to all three of those. Therefore, no solution. What is it? Resolution, no solution, dissolution, you know, Prabhupada said. That was Prabhupada's take, or his perception, or his opinion on modern solutions. Everyone gets together, they talk, they make a resolution, there is no solution, and everything falls apart. But unless you do something that is according to actually the science of relationships, how will it work? Someone who knows the nature of something is successful with it. A horse trainer, how are they successful with horses? Just because they're nice to the horse? Or they know what the nature of the horse is? How are you supposed to be nice to a horse? There's a nature of a horse, so there's a way to be nice to a horse. It's different than being nice to a dog or a cat. Right? So you understand, what does it mean to take care of a horse? So taking care is the common principle. But the detail changes. But if you don't know, how will it work? Someone knows horses, therefore they can deal with them. Therefore they get a result. But we're of the opinion ignorance is bliss, right? So if we know something about the nature, then we don't want to deal with it. Horse trainer gets the horse, gets on the horse, rides around. It works the way they want. Do they ever get kicked? Do they ever get thrown? Does this happen? Generally not, because they know how to deal. But they are horses. They do kick. They do throw, right? So if it happens, it happens. One of your great ancestors had that same problem of getting thrown by a horse. Old Genghis G, right? So that's the thing, is that you know what is there, what you're in for, and you're willing to work with it. That makes for a relationship. So, I say, if you know horses kick and throw, therefore, and they bite, so therefore you don't get involved with them, then that's fine. But then the person who does get involved with them also knows that and is willing to work with that. Right? But when we come to relationships with people, we don't work like that, right? The family, the problems in family life mentioned by the Shastras, as long as your arm. So those that appreciate this list, they don't get married. But generally, those who get married ignore the list, right? But when we were discussing about the horse, it's the person who understands this list and is willing to work with this list that will be successful in married life. Therefore, it says the first-class brahmachari makes a first-class grihastha. The knowledge is the same. The difference is one understanding what's involved doesn't get involved. And the one that does get involved gets involved knowing what they're dealing with and therefore uses the proper mood and technique and everything else. Does that make sense?
So, theoretically, everyone has the potential to make great friends and to live in a great society, in a personal society, but we just don't use it in the proper way to achieve all these things.
Yeah.
So the rules are the same for social life in the community as the rules for family life.
It's the same.
So, we do not. But
it's just the detail will adjust.
Somehow people turn their back to community life more easily because the ties are not so strong as in family life.
Those that turn their back on the community life generally don't have strong connection in the family life. Because those that turn their back actually don't know how to deal. Those that know how to deal have a successful family life, but members of the community don't necessarily know how to interact, then they're just passive. Does that make sense? But if there's an opportunity where you have persons that know how to interact, then they will. Someone goes into this building here, or comes here. Depending upon what is your perspective, that's what you're going to look at in this building. If you're into status, you look at that aspect of it. If you're into architecture, you look at that aspect of it. You know, if you're into aesthetics, you look at that aspect of it. You know, you like everything organized and everything, you're going to look for that. You know, if you're into atmosphere, you'll be looking for that. So therefore, if you're seeing the community doesn't have any interactive abilities, then that means that's your value. And that means you either have them or you don't. So the person saying there is no social interaction here either means they themselves also don't know how to socially interact, therefore they can see it. Or they have the ability and they are successful at it and they're making an observation how others don't. Okay. Now, how do you tell the difference? The one who has the ability is just pointing out that it's lacking. They have a relationship. It works for them. So it's not a crusade. Those who it doesn't work for them, but they want it to, there's the crusade. You understand? The person who is comfortable at home, happy at home, and then you ask them, oh, how come you don't come around so much? And you say, devotees don't interact so well, so I'm not interested. The trick is in the heart. The other one is, oh, how come you don't come around? Oh, these devotees, they're so impersonal and this and that, and they don't know how to act and all that, and they're just, you know, untrustworthy, this, that. What does that mean? Notice the difference in tone between the heart. So the person who's jumping up and down, that this is terrible, devotees don't, they're the ones that they themselves would not have a clue what real relationships are.
So at first sight, it would seem that they are the ones who want to improve the situation.
Of course, they're the ones who want to improve, but they wouldn't have a clue how to improve. Otherwise, why is it in the last, you know, how you say, you know, since as long as you've probably known, people are jumping up and down and starting all these different things and making committees. How many of them ever done anything? Name one. I'd be happy with one, right? And how long do they work? They go some time and then get upset and then disband. While leaders, then they have an understanding of something, and despite all odds, over so many years and nobody understanding it, then after, you know, so much time, half a life or a lifetime, they establish it. That's the person who knows. And the one that gave up means they actually didn't know. They have a feeling, they have an idea, they have an ideal, but they don't know how to get it. In other words, you go out on this street here, and how many people are talking about getting lots of money, and we'll do this, and we'll do that, and yeah, it'll be great. But how many get it? Because they don't know how to get it. The people that know how to get it have money. Isn't it? Just like people that know how to cook have good food. So people that know social science, they have it.
So his question would be that his duty is to learn how to do it and to do it.
That's self-realization. Know who you are and what you're supposed to do. See, self, if you've seen, Prabhupada describes self as the body, the mind, the intelligence, and the soul. We just take the soul and we throw everything else out. You have devotees saying, I'm not this body, so I'm not going to do the duties of this body. How is that self-realization? Right? Material energy exists. It follows God's laws, not our laws. Therefore, your conditioned nature is going to function according to God's laws, not our whim. So saying, I'm going to control this material energy however I like, is not self-realization. Right? If we're going to take the spiritual as the main, which is the most important, then I am servant of God, and I am at present, how do you say, conditioned to this particular material situation, and I act according to God's laws in it, whether I like it or not. So since this conditioned nature is controlled by Krishna, why wouldn't use it in Krishna's service? Why would I ignore it? So generally what I see is that devotees are unwilling to acknowledge their conditioned nature and how it can actually be used in Krishna's service. Right? I have a particular physical nature, intellectual nature, emotional nature. How do I deal with that? What would be the proper situation for engaging that in Krishna's service? So it sounds great as long as I'm not a Shudra, as long as there's no way that socially I would be considered inferior to anybody else, according to my definition of superior and inferior. And there should be no restriction to me doing whatever I want, however I want, whenever I want. In other words, I want to be free from any designations that would therefore dictate certain duties. But at the same time, as we discussed before, relationships actually based on duties. So what I'm actually saying is I'm very comfortable being a hardcore impersonalist But I cover that by jumping up and down and ranting and raving about personalism. Right? Good cover, right? If I have a fault, I cover my fault by, I can cover it by pointing it out in everybody else. Never bumped into that?
He's doing it himself.
Oh, okay. You have a perfect example.
Has to be perfected.
Oh, you mean you could work better at covering and... Well, first, let me tell you. The first place to start is never let anybody know that you're doing it. That's your first mistake. See, now everybody's like, uh-oh, now...
This is the trick. Because someone who says that must be very humble.
Very good, see? I guess that's why you're the... Why you're the boss here. lots to learn here. So, in other words, going back to what we had mentioned in the beginning of the class, is it doesn't matter if after hearing all this, one goes, wow, so now what to do? You start with right now. You don't worry about the past. I did this, or I did that, or I'm so terrible, I'm so disgusting, I'm so many derogatory terms. You work by where you're at today and how to connect that to Krishna, right? Everybody's a person. So one just has to know what that nature is and then connect it to Krishna. Does that make sense? So there's never any loss. And if we make that endeavor, then Krishna will fill in.
So sometimes I can distance myself from past mistakes and I'm not worried about the future. And it's so clear, theoretically, when I'm sitting here. But when I'm in the situation live, it, somehow I can't act properly.
So then you contemplate it afterwards.
Right?
Think what would have been the proper way to do it. Yeah. And if you continually do that, after a while, you'll start to do what you contemplate. So it takes time and practice. But the key there is that, you know, sincere use of the intelligence. Right? In other words, there are standards given by Krishna. Compare what you did against that, and then you can see what went wrong. Does that make sense? And then it'll work with time. No one said it'll happen overnight. Your determination can happen overnight. But the skill at it, that will take time. It doesn't mean that the problems won't come up, but they'll be easier and easier to deal with and correct and everything. Then eventually, then they'll stop coming up so often, and then they'll stop coming. But material world is a material world. So yeah, even if you operate it at its best, still it comes short of spiritual life. Perfectly run social and economic situations still never compare to, you know, the experience of direct devotional activities. Right? Even being Lord Brahma or Indra is not as good as chanting Hare Krishna. But you should be convinced of that. That's the use of this. If, by your experience, you're convinced that there's nothing in the material energy, and therefore you don't deal with it much, fine.
Good.
But if in dealing with the material energy you're frustrated, and that's why you're not dealing with it, that's not a solution. You will again get involved. Family life's bad, it's terrible, it's this, it's that, blah, you know. Nice, it makes for a vanaprastha for a few years. But if he meets a lady that, you know, behaves nice according to his definition or sees some other families interacting in a very nice way, his determination does break down. If one has been in that situation and one sees that there's nothing there and therefore it's nothing to offer, and therefore is nothing I need from it, that's someone who will last. A brahmachari is going to remain a brahmachari because he doesn't need women, not because women are bad. Does that make sense? Bad may be something that inspires you to actually take a look at it, but bad's not the reason that you don't do something. You understand the principle? So that's what one is trying to gain through the social system. By dealing with it properly, you get as good a result as can be gotten so that you're materially satisfied But comparing that to spiritual activities, then you see it doesn't compare. I'm dealing everything nice. My wife is satisfied. She interacts nicely. The kids are great. And the whole situation can't be better. But still, it doesn't compare to direct activities of devotional service. So that's the intellectual, right? Let us take the more sentimental. No, but my family is all nice devotees and everything's great and all that. But the devotional, in other words, seeing Krishna in the family life will be better than just a pious family life. But seeing Krishna indirectly through the family still won't compare to seeing Krishna directly. So in any case, that's what it's supposed to do. So either through the intelligence or through the mind, however it's approached, you will still see that the experience between direct Krishna consciousness and indirect Krishna consciousness is not as great. You know what I'm saying? Seeing Krishna as the power of the ocean is nice, but seeing the deity is nicer. So then the devotees will see Krishna as the power of the ocean, and then they'll remember that person in Krishna, and they remember the deity. So therefore, whatever situation they're in, it doesn't matter, because they're able to see Krishna in everything. But it brings them back to the person, Krishna. So that's the idea. Badly operated social, material life is an inspiration to get out of it. But maintaining that position of badly operated material interaction is not necessarily going to be great in one's devotional attempt. Because, how do you say? One's inspiration to not deal with the material energy is just that it's bad. Not that Krishna's good, why I should deal with the material. You understand? The gopis aren't turning to Krishna because in the material world the men are all bozos, so he's not from the material world, so therefore we'll take him. They like Krishna as a person. They like him. If you like him, who needs any of the local bozos? That's the difference of being attracted to Krishna or repulsed by the material energy. Being repulsed by the material energy, Narad Muni says, is a great way to be inspired to take up the spiritual, but it's not a sustainable platform. Right? It can only be sustained if one connects to the spiritual. Therefore, tasting the higher taste, there's no interest in the lower. Therefore, then, if one doesn't know how to deal, fine, as long as one's fully absorbed. But those things that distract one from being fully absorbed in Krishna, if those are taken seriously, if you don't know how to deal with them right, you're just going to get frustrated. No? Is that all understood? Right? In other words, you have a person that wouldn't have a clue how to operate a marriage. They join Krishna consciousness. They get married. Their marriage turns into a mess. Now, will they blame it that they don't know how to operate a marriage, or will they'll say it's Krishna consciousness and then leave? So many restrictions. Can't get intimate with your wife. Name me the married karmi that has a consistent intimacy with his wife. You're going to be restricted anyway. You know what I'm saying? But it's easy to blame it on Krishna consciousness. Harder to see one's own weakness.
So taking the analogy of a good brahmachari makes a good grihastha, we can say that a good grihastha will make a good vanaprastha, and then a good sannyas, and a miserable grihastha will make a miserable vanaprastha, and so on.
Yeah. Miserable meaning that they didn't know how to operate it.
Yes.
Misery is a matter of perception.
For me, miserable means that he cannot operate it and it's a chaos. And he has this feeling or realization that yes, the teaching of the Bhagavatam is true, is manifest in my life, and then I have to leave grihastha life and take up renunciation.
As long as you understand the principles on which it's working, then it'll work. But bad interaction will follow you wherever you go. It's the one thing you can't leave behind when you pack your bags. Vanaprast, leave the house, leave the wife, leave the kids, leave the money. leave the mind. No, mind goes with you. Doesn't need a bag. It's quite accommodating. I guess you're the bag. So
that's
the mind comes with its own bag, right? You know, you buy a fancy purse, you know, you get a bag to put the purse in. So when you, the mind brings its own bag with it.
So if someone cannot make relationships function, then how can he carry on for so long with Grihastha life, 10 to 30 years with Grihastha life, and then Vanaprastha and everything, and how come he doesn't fall out of Krishna consciousness or life as such?
It means if one's been married for 30 years, one's doing something right. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
Bad here, you have to define what is bad. Right? The family is together, the family is a working unit. Bad means you're not happy. Whoever said you'd become happy by getting married? Who? You know what I'm saying?
Yes, I see.
So if you're taking bad means you're not happy, then you might be doing fine in your family life. Family's working, it's together. If it wasn't working, the wife would have tossed you out years ago.
Just please confirm my understanding that success in married life or sannyas or community life simply means that it's working and not that we are happy.
On the material platform, yes. On the spiritual platform, success means it's connected to Krishna. Because if you're operating the family life nice, but one's not happy, by taking Vanaprastha sannyas doesn't guarantee material happiness. The material world cannot guarantee happiness. Dukalaya ashashvatam. Dukalai. You have a place, like basanalai, means, alai means it has, it sells. Basan alai means they sell basan, or they sell pots and pans. Then vastralai means they have cloth. Vidyalai means they have knowledge. Dukalai means they have unhappiness. Right? It's not neuro brain surgery here, you know? Right? Ashashvatam, it's temporary. That's what you get here. You know what I'm saying? You walk into the computer shop, they have computers. You walk into the material world, they have misery.
Yes.
No problem. Take how much you like. All you have to do is be a little ignorant and it works great. Guaranteed satisfaction of absolute misery. Right? You didn't see the sign on your way in? It was on the left. Maybe you didn't notice.
So the problem is that when I forget all about this, I feel that life is beautiful and I like living and it's so nice.
Yes, but then the ashashvatam part comes into play. Yes. It's well thought out.
You gotta
give somebody credit here. It's really well done. And everybody gets the same experience.
Right? So it was mentioned that many people come to Krishna consciousness because they were frustrated with their material life, and no research was done on how many people come to Krishna consciousness because they want to taste a higher taste. Maybe it's not there is no use doing such research, but if we don't come to Krishna consciousness because we want to taste a higher taste, then how can we take the computer apart, just as you said yesterday, in order to our own computer, how should we take it apart so that we can get the higher taste?
Means the human being needs a relationship, and relationship is defined by religion. So we don't follow God's religion, we'll make up our own. So if we analyze, okay, so the problem is not that we want to be happy. The problem is not actually that we're attached. The problem is we're not attached to Krishna, and we don't have a relationship with Krishna. So it doesn't matter which of the four one comes from. One takes that and has to connect that to Krishna. In other words, Krishna is the only actually stable environment, or the only stable relationship. Means all knowledge comes back to Him. So why would you go somewhere else for knowledge? And developing that relationship with Him fulfills all those other needs. Does that make sense? Because then Krishna is the maintainer, He is the protector. Right? And we identify ourselves as the servant. So it's just a matter of taking it to that next step. So whatever one's attachments are, one takes them apart and sees that the principle of attachment is not the problem, but the detail through which I am applying that attachment, that's a problem. Does that make sense? Okay, we're attached to the child. But we're attached to the child because of the emotions and experiences we gain from interacting with the child. So being attached to people and that's not the problem. The problem is that this is temporary, and it tends to be self-centered. Because I'm dealing with it because I'm getting something from it. I get nothing from it, I tend to not deal with it. Unfortunately, of all the rasas, parenthood is legally binding for a lifetime. I can scare off people that appreciate me, I can fire juniors to me, I can dump friends, and I can get divorced. But do what you like, you're legally bound to this living entity just because it takes birth from you. So then you analyze what it is that you're into it for. And then from that you can see and break down that actually is completely self-centered. But now, having done that, the proper conclusion is now I will connect that to Krishna, not now I will stop dealing with my kids.
But how to connect to Krishna?
How to connect to Krishna? We're training them as Krishna's devotees. In any way, the soul is Krishna's devotee, whether they realize it or not. It's naturally nature of the soul to be compassionate, so the soul needs certain things because they have this gross material identity. So therefore, since it's within our position to assist in that, we do that.
If one is a mother but one has more grown-up children who don't want to be, who are old enough not to want to become Krishna's devotees, and what other means does a mother dispose of to have her children get closer to Krishna consciousness?
Yes, it's the greatest secret weapon. It's called prasadam.
Yeah, that works.
Guaranteed. Everybody wants to eat. Everyone likes good food. That's why, believe it or not, that's why the main, most important element in a girl's training as a girl is cooking. Because every living entity on the planet wants to eat. And what they want to eat is something good. All men want to eat something good. Kids love to eat something good. Women have to eat something good. So that means, right there, you have an automatic relationship with 6 billion people on this planet. Guaranteed. Can't get better than that. But if you don't know how to cook, then what else do you get out of a woman? That's your choice. So therefore... Yeah, okay. I think I'll rest my case. I think the point's been made. That's why cooking and cleaning is the main duty of the women, because automatically then everything works. Then on top of that, then whatever is their individual nature, then they learn different skills and sciences and arts, whatever is their ability. So she may be very intellectual, fine. But that is maybe a job, or maybe that is a hobby, but it's not a relationship. You know what I'm saying? How far can you go sitting there discussing quantum physics with another physicist? How much can you do that? You know what I'm saying? You know. Oh, you have such great protons. Oh, your experiment today was just so nice. That was just so... You know what I'm saying? Therefore, the cooking, the cleaning, the knowing the feminine nature, that's the predominant, because that's where relationship lies. Arts and sciences add to that. but they can't replace it. In the Vedic age, even the good prostitutes, they were excellent cooks. The common street prostitute didn't have to be. But the top two levels, they had to, they were expert cooks. Urvasi, right? Urvasi. She lived with the king for how many years? You think she didn't cook? You know what I'm saying?
So if there's a person in the community with whom everyone has the same problem, or the whole community has the same problem, and in that case, was it the individual or the community who made the mistake?
You could probably say in that case, if everybody has a problem with them, that possibly that person is a problem. I remember there was this one person.
He
always had complaint about everybody, a problem with everybody. And then the leader of the community there was like cracking their head trying to solve all these problems. And one day the leader was sitting there in the chair, and this person walked by, this devotee. And the leader looked at him and said, you know, I've been thinking about it. And they said, you know, you don't have a problem. You are the problem. So if everybody has it, then you could say that possibly that person needs some work. But then basically the community, with an idea to make the situation work, should tell them. If it's a minor thing that doesn't really bother anybody, then you leave it alone. But if it's actually really seriously bothering people, they should be aware how they're bothering everybody in the community. You know what I'm saying? The leadership of the community can't allow the community to be bothered by somebody.
Right?
Protection means that you try to maintain and protect those under you to the best of your ability. So being aware, they either correct it and interact, or stop bothering. Because Krishna consciousness is also perfectly applicable in one's own house alone. Not that, oh, well, they're doing service. They can also do service at home.
So he would like to know how we can understand the direct process, what its method, its means, its process.
Direct is what we generally discuss. You know, the process of chanting Hare Krishna, hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, associating with the devotees, worshipping the deities, and living in the Dham. That's direct. You know what I'm saying? Everything else is supporting that. Right? So the 64 items of devotional service, those five are the main. All the other 59 mentioned then are either direct supports of that or things that keep you from doing something that will make it not work.
Does that make sense?
Like that. So basically, if you want any means, the same thing that makes the direct work makes the indirect work. In other words, you must understand the position of direct service and its glory. That's the first verse. You must understand, have the right attitude, not being proud. In other words, you understand your position. First verse explains the position of the mission. Second verse explains your position. Third verse explains the etiquette required to follow that mission. Then the fourth will be that attitude without fruit of desire. Right? How to properly apply that. Right? Fifth will therefore then, from that, will degenerate the attraction. Sixth, the attachment. Seventh, the perfection. Eighth, what is the actual underlying mood of that perfection? Does that make sense?
The question is that if someone sees one's mistakes in oneself, but cannot heal them or cannot correct them, what's to be done?
It's practice. You know what I'm saying? Means recognizing the problem, that's basically 50% of the problem. You know, just like, why is it kids in the winter out in the snow remain sick? Because they don't recognize that being out and playing in the snow for hours is what's making them sick. To them it's fun. So when you figure out that what you call fun is what makes you sick, then you get somewhere. As one devotee was telling me that his father had told him before he joined the movement, what makes you happy makes you crazy. So in other words, recognizing it, that's already a big step. So therefore then, analyzing how that bad quality or habit or whatever it is disturbs all your relationships and all your good experiences, if you keep analyzing that, after a while, you start to distance yourself from it. And then it's practice. You can't allow the false ego to get in the way. That's why humility is so important. Because due to pride, then you want to do everything perfect. So therefore, the tendency is you won't even practice doing it right because you may fail. But if one is humble, right, then one can practice it even if one still fails. But at least you tried. And then you keep trying. Yeah, so don't let the ego get in the way of your practice. And contemplate what would have been the proper and correct way of doing. Then by practicing, then it will come with time. You know, you may find it doesn't happen overnight, but if you keep practicing, it will happen. You understand? First you hear, it's called shravan. Then you contemplate it and practice it together. That gives you understanding. That's called manana. Then from that practice, you'll get nididhyasana, which is realization. That's where your result will be found. So realization comes from application of knowledge. Right? If you just do application or just have knowledge, you don't get realization.
So we said that if we have problems, we are the ones to blame for them. And if you see that someone has problems, just like you may have problems, and the person is to blame, how to have that person correct that problem instead of telling him how bad he is and
see, telling someone how bad they are is only to wake them up to the point that they acknowledge that there's a problem. But once that's been recognized, then it's what do you do to get over the problem? So the problem's not that they at that point, then the problem's not that the problem's there. The problem is are they following the process to get rid of it? If someone's practicing and they're not doing it right, you know, it's just like, let's say, you're trying to teach someone how to ride a bike, that they fell off, you don't have to tell them, oh, you fell off the bike again. You know, I mean, you don't have to be Einstein to figure that one out. You have to point out is, when you're riding the bike, you can't let go of the handlebars, or you can't take your feet off the pedals, or vertical things sticking out of the ground are generally an obstacle for the, you know, smooth forward motion of a bicycle. Right? So therefore, you're concentrating on the process, pointing out the fault, that is the field. Then dealing with that field, then you progress. So therefore, then you focus on the progress. So what's making the progress not work? Not the fault. The fault, that's obvious. So therefore, it's the same process we mentioned before. False ego has to be left out of it. Just as they're not going to progress if they don't acknowledge that unless they practice, they're not going to get through it. Same way is they're not going to progress if you're assisting them, if you always bring it back to the fault rather than the process. Why point out the fault? Because that makes you better. Somebody just fell off their bicycle. Is it really important for them to hear, man, you just fell off again. What kind of idiot are you? Did they need that to go, wow, I just fell off the bicycle. Oh, is that why my knees and elbows and head hurt? I would have never known if you didn't tell me I fell off my bicycle. Right? What would I ever do without you? Right? So by saying that, what does it do? It puts you in the senior position. I can find a fault in you. Therefore, by inference, I'm saying I'm better. That's why fault finding is considered the worst of all the anartas. Because it cultivates false ego. False ego is I am God. And if I am God, then how do I establish a relationship with this other blue guy with the flute that he says he's God? And I'm the one with the cool jeans. You know, he's still wearing his mother's bed sheets. And at least maybe he could put an electric pickup on his flute, you know. Come on, get it together now. Isn't it? So that's the point. False ego is generally always the problem.
Is it only because of pride that people are so much afraid of failure?
Basically. Pride, and then there's another element is security. But they're connected. Security means you have an identity. So therefore, if you can't do something, then what's your identity? And a failed identity is not very secure. Right? What will you get from it? So the tendency is it'll be false ego. Either directly is that, I don't want to be bad, do something wrong and have people laugh, so therefore I won't do it. Or the point is that if I fail, then others will see me in a light that therefore I won't be properly supported. Right? So there's a loss in position, therefore a loss in relationship. So generally you would find, it's both false ego, but generally you would find the men would be more a problem with the false ego in that if I don't do it perfectly, then, you know, I don't want to do it. For women, it would be more security. It'll look the same, but it's underlying, it'll be slightly different.
Because he infinitely feels this pressure on him that a successful temple president cannot afford to be unsuccessful or to fail in something, or a successful book distributor can't afford to be fail or be unsuccessful. And it's not something Krishna conscious, but somehow there's the pressure.
Define success.
Tangible results somehow means success.
So then you failed. But if success means being Krishna conscious, it redefines it. You understand? The modern culture is so masculine, which means, masculine means a result that comes from your endeavor. Therefore, that mentality is engaged in Krishna consciousness. So therefore, you have to get results for Krishna. There, then body, mind, and words are engaged.
Somehow we have a system to celebrate if a temple has many devotees or if a book distributor has distributed many books. But somehow we can celebrate if someone has chanted his rounds without offense.
It's simple. It doesn't make money. People are only glorified in something that makes money. Right? You had Brahmins. With time, then the Kshatriyas kind of ignore them. And so the Kshatriyas take over. Of course, without the Brahmins, they don't necessarily behave nicely. So look at any revolution. Then who is then trying to push the Kshatriyas aside?
Merchants. Those
the bourgeois.
Yes.
Yeah? So then? So this at present is a society of the bourgeois.
Yeah,
not of Brahmins or Kshatriyas. Therefore, the whole focus, if it makes money, it's practical, it's real, it has substance. If it doesn't make money, then it doesn't matter. I mean, Vrindavan is also a Vaishya culture. I'm saying they generate economics. So therefore, to use economics as a main thrust to inspire people and enthuse people and engage them in Krishna consciousness is not a problem. You know what I'm saying? You know, so that's there. But one has to recognize what are all the forms of respect. So age, I say relationship, you know, like it means in relatives, wealth, influence, performance of sacrifice, knowledge, and then of course amongst us, and devotion, or realization. So each of those will have a different way that it's recognized. So like that, it's just like, let us say, so the point is if that's understood, then people will be appreciating the things for what they are. So you just have to see, does it inspire? I know some zones, when they read the scores, they read the total score. They don't even mention names. So it just whatever works. You know what I'm saying? If you have a community that's more focused on that kind of result, then by bringing that out, they will be enthused. So, like that, you just have to see what works. You want to have some fun, go around, turn everything in the temple into numbers, right? And, you know, after, you know, so many big books, and so many this, and Bhakta this did that, and you know, Bakhtin, she cooked, you know, 17.3 loaves of bread. And Bhakta Joey, he cleaned, you know, 27.5 meters of bathroom. And Bhakta George, he carried, you know, 53.9 kilos of goods into the godown. Haribol. And, you know, this one ate this much halava, and that one, you know, like that. Then you'll first start to find everyone will just go throw this whole thing right out. But the point is to inspire the devotees in this service. You know, so if it creates inspiration, then it should be used. If it doesn't, why would it be used? So if it works, great. And you have to find out what's the best way of appreciating. You know what I'm saying? So then, rather than a drum roll, you know, for having cooked all the loaves of bread, if someone just went up and said, nice bread, that would probably work better. You know, so just in the same way you don't take book distribution for granted, nothing else should be taken for granted. Army works on its stomach. You don't feed the army, and the biggest, toughest, nastiest book distributors don't distribute any books. The most austere, most, you know, best sadhana, most, you know, filthiest, nastiest, puffed up book distributor. Don't feed them for a week. Let's see how many books go out. And of course, they don't need sleep. They don't need a clean place to lay down. They don't need any washing done. You know, they don't need a toilet. They just go out in the field. Hey, temple devotees are in Maya, so what do we need the temple for? Hey, we'll just sleep under a tree. Right? And then there's all those guys in Maya sitting behind the computers at the BBT. So the point is everyone appreciates everyone else for what they're adding to the process.
So if appreciation doesn't come from outside, I have to develop a self-appreciation so that the pressure diminishes.
Self-appreciation. Well, you have to make devotees aware of, you know, what is to be appreciated. It means devotees have to be trained to know how to properly, you know, appreciate. Gratefulness is a, how you say, one of the aspects of intelligence. So therefore, devotees are supposed to be intelligent. Therefore, they should understand how to be grateful. Does that make sense? So devotees have to be made aware. If you have discussions about the philosophy and the culture, you know, like that, then it'll be more appreciated. Because Sankirtan means the complete kirtan. So that includes also cultivating the devotees.
Cool.
Yeah, that's the meaning of Vishwambar. Right? Chaitanya is the life. That's the life of the mission. So that's the preaching. The Vishwambar is the nourishing that, cultivating the devotees.
Cool. Right?
And Gaura is what we're... What is the goal that one's trying to attain? Does that make sense? So that's the process. You chant that every day 10 times. No, 30 times. How are we doing on time?
3 past 10. 3 past 7.
3 past 7.
10 past 2.
Yeah, 3 past 10.
3 past 10. Yeah. Not 7 past 10. You sure it's 7 past 10 or 3 past 10?
10 past 3.
10 past 3. Not 7 past 3 or 3 past 3.
Actually, I think it's 3 past 7.
Maybe you need a new watch. Something big. Digital.
It's not properly set 7 minutes ahead, and I have to, you know, take off the 7 minutes.
I see. That you also took off a few hours. Okay, so I think it's time to stop. Okay, then we'll continue tomorrow. Jai. Srila Prabhupada ki.
Jai.
Vika Bhakta Vrinda ki.
Jai.
Tiny Tiger.